This is New Testament Character Study number 43 on Simeon. Simeon is one of the earlier characters we meet in the Gospel of Luke. Luke has actually quite a few men and women who do not appear in the other Gospels. Off the top of my head, I can think of the following unique characters: Zechariah and Elizabeth, that is the parents of John the Baptist, Zacchaeus, the tax collector, Simon the Pharisee, the widow of Nain, Simeon and Anna. Well, those are just some off the top of my head. But it's interesting to see in Luke 2 the responses to the birth of Jesus of a number of different parties. You have the shepherds, you have the angels, Simeon, Anna, the elders, and so on. And we're going to be looking at an interesting interaction where Simeon meets Jesus, but Jesus is a baby. We read in Luke chapter 2, verse 25. Now there was a man in Jerusalem named Simeon, who was righteous and devout, looking for the restoration of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was upon him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Christ. So Simeon, directed by the Spirit, came into the temple courts, and when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what was customary according to the law, Simeon took him in his arms and saying, "Now, according to your word, sovereign Lord, permit your servant to depart in peace, for my eyes have seen your salvation, that you have prepared in the presence of all peoples a light for revelation to the Gentiles and for glory to your people Israel." Now, he's not finished speaking, but let's just see, who is this man? It was necessary for a baby to be presented in the temple. That would be a small sacrifice. And that suggests that Simeon may be a priest. He may be a Levite. But if he's not, maybe he's from another tribe. Maybe the tribe of Simeon, who knows? But he's righteous and devout. And he understood that the messianic age was beginning. We don't know how old he is. It had been revealed to him that he wouldn't die before he had seen the Messiah. That could suggest that he's advanced in years, probably so, but I don't know. I can't be so confident. Maybe he's middle-aged. Maybe he's ancient. But he understood the messianic age was beginning, and he also understood that this was not some narrow nationalism, that it's just all about Israel, because the gospel is for the entire world. And so when he prays, he says, "According to your word, sovereign Lord, permit your servant to depart in peace," which I think he's talking about dying. Now he can die because now he's seen the Christ. And he speaks of salvation prepared in the presence of all peoples, and it's a light for revelation to the Gentiles. In the New Testament, peoples and Gentiles, normally that's the same word, nations also. So it's for glory to your people Israel, but it's not only for Israel. That was an insight, unfortunately, many of the Jewish leaders failed to have. Also, you may have noticed he was looking for the restoration of Israel. Now, Israel, some people thought, would be restored in a very dramatic, flamboyant, visible, political, and physical way. That they looked at the prophecies of the Old Testament in a very literal way, and they viewed as the whole world having to come to Jerusalem as basically the capital of the world. And I understand why they looked at it that way. They were taking things quite literally. But Israel was restored as Jesus came, but not in the way they thought. It was not in a political way, a misunderstanding common to groups like evangelicals or messianic Jews. No, the restoration of Israel was going to happen through the church. The people of God would no longer be this national group, this ethnic group. They would be all who have faith in Jesus Christ. They're all the children of Abraham. I'm probably giving a bit more theology than I plan to. Anyway, he goes to the temple courts, and the parents, Joseph and Mary, bring the child Jesus to him, and he holds him in his arms. I think that's quite touching. Think of how few people had the opportunity to embrace Jesus when Jesus was still a baby. Well, this was such great news. Simeon is basically ready to die. I'm ready to go. But he's not finished speaking, so let's look at the final verses. So the child's father and mother were amazed at what was said about him. Then Simeon blessed them and said to his mother Mary, "Listen carefully. This child is destined to be the cause of the falling and rising of many in Israel, and to be a sign that will be rejected. Indeed, as a result of him, the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your own soul as well." When he meets Joseph and Mary, Simeon is not filled with sentiment or superstition. He's not falling down drooling over the holy parents. He simply blesses them. And then he speaks not to Joseph, though Joseph was there, he speaks to Mary. And he says that this child, Jesus, is destined to be the cause of the falling and rising of many, and to be a sign that will be rejected. Although everything about Christ should be good news, it's all gospel, Simeon saw the other side of the coin. He foresaw that many would reject the Christ. They would reject the Messiah and his message, which is painful and deeply sad. And yet it's more than that. He tells Mary that a sword will pierce her soul. Now, if he's referring to the difficulty, the pain of being a mother of someone who's so controversial, someone who provokes people everywhere, one who was against the establishment and would be executed in his 30s, well, that would make sense. It makes sense to me that the sword piercing her soul is related to Jesus' death, which would have taken place when Mary was around age 50, maybe a little younger, maybe right about there. Although we wonder also what swords might have pierced Simeon's soul during his long life. Let's look at his qualities and then we'll make some application. Because the purpose of these studies of these characters is not just to give biographical information, it's to help us and to see what the Lord would want us to learn. Simeon, I respect as someone who is faithful despite his age. Many of us who became Christians when we were young had mixed feelings towards older Christians. Some of that would have happened whether or not we were Christians. It's just a generational thing. And yet, it's also true that sometimes older believers have lost passion. They've drifted. They're not living the kind of life that they lived earlier, at least in terms with appropriate, age-appropriate convictions. Simeon is faithful despite his age. His perspective, secondly, is in line with the Scriptures. He's not just excited that the Messiah has come and it's good news for Israel. He sees the big picture, the promise of God from Genesis on, that he would work in the world through a people, but not just for the sake of that one people. Simeon was not prejudiced in favor of the Jews. The faith was about to open up in a huge way, and he rejoiced in and was content with God's will. Faithful despite age. A scriptural perspective, not prejudiced, and rejoicing in, content with God's will. How about you and me? Are we like Simeon? What if you're an older brother or sister? Do you still have passion? Granted, it will be expressed differently in your 50s or 60s than it would be in your teens or 20s. But do we have it? I love that Psalm 92 that speaks of those who continue to bear fruit in old age, that we got to keep our passion, our faith, and nurture it, and not just fizzle out, but be like Simeon, strong to the end, filled with hope. Second, do we have a truly scriptural perspective? Do we see the big picture of the Bible, or is our perspective just a mishmash of things we've picked up on the internet and odd sermons we might have listened to and some books we've read? To have a scriptural perspective, we're going to have to do better than that. And a third question, am I content, like Simeon, in accepting God's will for my life, for his people, and for the world? I like to repeat those three questions. Are we like Simeon? Particularly if we're older, do we have that passion? Is our perspective truly scriptural, or is it something less? And am I content in accepting God's will for my life, for his people, and for the world? I hope that's useful to you. Next, we'll be looking at Hannah, or Anna, another character, older woman in this case, and we read about her right after Simeon, but that's a different lesson. Thanks for listening.